All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
Ken Laird and Stoners 365.
Man to brothers. We're the Steelers. Steelers on three. 1, 2, 3.
We talk Steelers and more Steelers 365 days a year.
Style points don't matter. We win the game. This is a legendary defense.
On Tribune Live Radio.
Quarter polls, Steelers 365. That's right. 1/4 of the season is complete. 2-2 Steelers. Getting ready for the 2-2 San Diego Superchargers. Coming up Monday night next week out at the old Qualcomm Stadium by the water. Now, feels like a game that's winnable. Steelers are 3-point dogs. Chargers a 2-2 team that is 2-0 at home, having defeated Detroit and Cleveland. Losers on the road to the Bengals in a pretty close game, actually. The Chargers have done a better job defensively against Cincy than anybody else has done. And also San Diego lost to Minnesota. But yes, they've got Phillip Rivers. The Steelers don't have Ben Roethlisberger healthy right now. Chargers are a banged-up football team. They had 10 players out at various points of their win over Cleveland, which they were fortunate to win because, well, Cleveland was Cleveland, as the Steelers were fortunate to beat St. Louis because Foles was Foles. And then again, I guess Foles just beat Arizona. I was thinking to myself, which is the more likely game to steal here? Because it feels like they'll be underdogs in the next 2 weeks against San Diego Monday night on the road with a long week to prepare, or at home against a better record Arizona team with a short week to prepare. I kind of throw out the St. Louis win over Arizona this week because it's a division game. Chargers are good, decent anyway. Arizona feels like they're the better team, but they're at home. But based on how banged up San Diego is, this game actually feels like it's the one you can take with the long week. 3-point dogs, it's manageable. Now, Rivers has been a turnover machine of late up until this last week. Had interceptions in 10 straight games until this week. He like took care of the ball, and he was talking about after the game, I was not going to have a forced fumble in this one. He was 23 of 38. He threw the ball away 4 times. He has 3 members of his offensive line out, and he's a bit of a riverboat gambler as a QB himself, but he put up a good quarterback rating, 118.1. They're going to get Antonio Gates back this week. Their other big tight end, Ladarius Green, is pretty good, and the Steelers struggle covering tight ends, as we know. So I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but the pressure is there to be had. They've handled San Diego pretty well in recent memory. They did lose to them in 2012 at home, but prior to that had won 8 out of 9, the only loss other than that coming in 2006 out there in San Diego, a 23-13 defeat. Most of those games have been at home, though, including in the postseason in 08 en route to the Super Bowl win that the Steelers have. So, you know, you can't take too much into that, but that's where it's all kind of in the kettle here as we hit Steelers 365 on this Wednesday, October 7th. It's brought to you by Mr. Rooter Plumbing with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge online at rooter2.com. That's rooter, the number 2.com. Steelers 365 brought to you by Mr. Magic Car Wash with 5 great locations. To serve you, Brentwood, Castle Shannon, Banksville Road, Upper St. Clair, and Bridgeville, and at MrMagicCarWash.com. And we're brought to you by Garland Insurance at Nationwide, products and services and solutions to help you and your family build for the future. Contact Rich Garland today. That's Nationwide's Rich Garland, 412-678-8868. Find out if your money could be working harder for you. Again, that number, 412-678-8868. Mike Tomlin against Mike McCoy is the coaching matchup. Tomlin's presser yesterday, reminiscing back to last Thursday about the areas that they failed in. It was a pretty long list. Here's what Mike T had to say.
You know, we failed in a lot of areas. We really had opportunities to secure the game in all 3 phases and weren't able to do it in any. Had several opportunities offensively, whether it was regulation to maintain possession of the ball and close the game out, or convert some in overtime. And defensively, same thing. We had, you know, we got after them pretty good there at the end of regulation, but we gave up a significant gain that allowed them to get in field goal range and get out of bounds at the same time, which will obviously set the game into overtime. And we're just a hair late on the blitz there on a significant play in overtime that allowed them to get a chunk there. Will Gay came off the edge and had an opportunity to potentially sack Flacco, but didn't get there in time. They got the ball out. And then, obviously, the areas where we fell short in special teams.
And Mike's right about that. You know, the two possessions in overtime that the Ravens had, because all you think about when you look back to the Baltimore game is, well, Scobie sucks and he missed a couple kicks. And if you want to criticize their fourth and one scenarios, the Steelers did get one pass breakup on Mike Mitchell's PBU on the sideline on Kamar Aiken, but they couldn't get home in overtime on a pair of 3-and-1s. Well, a bunch of running plays, but the play-action pass that Kamar Aiken had for 11 yards was pretty key. On a play fake, he put him in position to kick the field goal. Other than that, it was Forsett and then Tucker hitting the 52-yard field goal. So I suppose they did fail in a lot of areas, but you can't criticize the defense too much based on a long game and the plays they were able to come up with. The positive performances from the Baltimore game, Tomlin had a few. He was picking through and did mention the defense.
Le'Veon took a step in his second game back. I was generally pleased with the performance of Mike. I'm excited about having a full week's physical preparation with him in helmet perspective, practice, full speed practice. I think he's only going to get better in terms of managing our offense and doing what's required for us to win in that area. I think the defense is improving week in and week out. Still got a ways to go in a lot of areas, but I see dramatic improvement in some areas. I thought our special teams game took a step up in the return game in our last performance. I thought we had a significant punt return when we needed it late in that game. I thought we had a significant kickoff return that got us out beyond the 30 when we needed it. That's good to see. We got to continue to grow in our return game. We haven't had enough production there.
And Tomlin's right about special teams. They actually, you know, the punting wasn't very good in that game from Jordan Berry, but Dree Archer actually did show up. He had a big, I mean, it's 29-yard punt return, or kick return, rather. But, hey, at least it's something. Got him out to the 31 for the start of overtime. And then on their second series, Antonio Brown stepped out of bounds at the 40, but had a nice 29-yard return up from the 10, 30-yard return, whatever it was there. And that did get him set up at the 40-yard line. They should win the game there after that kind of a return. And they hit Antonio for 17 yards. So, you know, you're first and 10 at the Baltimore 42. A field goal could win it. You should win that game. They get a third and two. They get stuffed, and then they go for it. And I don't blame them for going for it. I would not have kicked a field goal either based on Scobie already missing two. You know, it's a 51-yarder, 50 to 51-yarder. Nance and Sims wanted it. I did not. You went for Antonio Brown, who was hot for you, who is your best player, arguably, and Mike Vick couldn't make that throw. Either it was a poorly designed throw for him because maybe he just can't make it at this point in his career, but it's across his body. It's about an 8-yard route, too, if you look at it, and it's a high pass. You know, it's across his body, I understand, for a left-handed quarterback, but maybe the route was too deep, or maybe Mike Vick, just as an NFL quarterback, a backup's got to be able to make that throw. It's an 8-yard out pattern. And Brown was open, and it was nowhere close. So that's where you're concerned about this week in San Diego. Okay, you got a full week to prepare, but is Vic going to be any more accurate when you have open receivers and he's got to put it on the money? Then again, he put one right on Antonio Brown's hands earlier in the game that should have been caught for a touchdown and probably wins the game too. As I mentioned, injuries on both sides here for these teams. The Chargers are real banged up. We'll go through their injury list here in a moment. Steelers are getting a little healthy. Good news for Ryan Shazier and Marcus Wheaton, not so much for Matt Spaeth. Here's what Tomlin said on the injury front.
Ryan Shazier appears to be dramatically improving, but I'll list him as questionable. We'll continue to monitor his progress throughout the week. Matt Spaeth has a broken hand. He has a cast on that. We'll watch him operate and evaluate his level of effectiveness in preparation and let that be our guide in terms of his participation with that injury. Marcus Wheaton looks dramatically improved from the ankle injury that he sustained in game, and he's got a real chance to participate.
Yeah, and that's all good news. I mean, particularly Shazier, this is a week where you're going to see actually two scat back running backs and Danny Woodhead and Melvin Gordon. Green and Gates, of course, are the big tight ends, so Shazier's important, and Tomlin knows it. I mean, getting Antonio Gates back, even though he's old, He's fresh now. And let's be honest, he's probably still medically enhanced. 35 years of age and still going strong. Gates called himself rebooted after serving his suspension. Tomlin's aware of him.
He's got a nice arsenal of weapons. I think the first guy you mentioned is Antonio Gates. You know, they've had a relationship for some time. Anticipate him being back and in the fold this week, coming off suspension. I'd imagine that he's ready to go. He's a perennial Pro Bowl type player, dynamic guy, obviously a tough physical matchup in a lot of ways. He's big. He's capable of bodying people, but he's also a savvy and athletic route runner. He's oftentimes too athletic for linebackers and too big for safeties to cover. We got to put together a good plan to minimize his impact on the game. But his running mate also in green is a talented vertical threat like tight end, an oversized wide receiver, if you will. He's adept at getting up the field. He's logged a lot of quality reps here in the first 4 weeks of the season and built a nice rapport with Phillip Rivers. And I'd imagine that'll continue even as Gates comes back. And I imagine their two tight end set is going to be one that we have to contend with.
And they will have to contend with it because Ladarius Green, 14 of 18 catches, you know, of 18 balls thrown his way, almost 200 yards. He's a big boy. And Gates, his numbers speak for themselves. 788 catches, the team's all-time leader, over 10,000 yards, 99 touchdown receptions. So, and I could for sure see him getting the 100 mark this week. You know, the PEDs that Gates was suspended for, he, like every other athlete suspended for PEDs, Gates put out the statement and he blamed it on, in an effort to recover, using supplements and holistic medicines. And unfortunately, Antonio now learned that those substances always present a risk because they may contain banned substances even if the ingredient list does not reflect them. So he went to the holistic approach excuse, which is good. I like that one. I think that's above the grade in terms of excuse making in NFL PED suspensions. Of course, the Steelers are going to get Martavis Bryant back, and he put out, I think, a one-sentence statement, "Yes, I smoked the tree." I think that was pretty much all he said. Tomlin, though, in terms of his approach this week, and Keith Butler, I think this was the most fascinating stuff from the Tomlin presser yesterday. Tomlin talking about what they did schematically against Baltimore, and this is really something you never heard in the Dick LeBeau era, or I can't remember it. Basically saying, we gave up runs, but we knew that was coming. We were willing to get gashed in the run game to basically blitz DBs and corners and take some chances that we don't normally do. Listen to what Tomlin said here.
They did a nice job in the game, and don't want to take anything away from them, but you know, we wanted to minimize their play-action pass. So we went into the game knowing that we might give up a little bit in the run game in the effort to not get bogged down in the run and miss an opportunity to rush their play pass. They got significant chunks via the play pass going into the game. And so we wanted to attack that to minimize those chunks. We realized in doing so we might expose ourselves to some run. We probably expose ourselves to a little bit more run than we anticipated, but you give them credit for executing from that standpoint.
You know, and I guess I buy that. I mean, if you watch the game, you could see they were blitzing the hell out of Baltimore. And the sacks are up this year, 14. That's four off the league pace set by Denver, who has 18. So far, so good here at the quarter pole. I mean, if you were going to poll Steeler Nation, I would imagine the response would be pretty favorable for how the D has looked. Now, they give up 19 straight passes to Brady in week one, and that was more of the same. But they're getting to the quarterback. They did have the Ross Cockrell pick. I thought that was a beautifully designed play. They played so well in this game, that's what made it more frustrating, the loss in overtime to the Ravens 23-20 last Thursday. It's like they blew a real good performance where there were a couple tricks that Butler pulled out of the bag there. And I don't know that you can reuse all those this week. I'm sure the Chargers will be studied up and ready for it. But that being said, San Diego is missing their left tackle, King Dunlap, their left guard, Orlando Franklin, multiple centers, including Chris Watt, who I think was their starter. So the immortal Chris Hairston, Kenny Wiggins, and Trevor Robinson on the left side, which Cam Hayward should have a field day with. and get to the quarterback with some frequency this week to continue that pressure. And maybe you'd have to blitz fewer DBs with Rivers standing back there. But, you know, Rivers is, as he said, he's trying to be more cautious these days. They're also missing Malcolm Floyd, who left the game with a concussion. Their third receiver, Stevie Johnson's out with a hammy. They signed Jacoby Jones in the offseason. He hasn't played since week one. So, I mean, by Monday, who knows? This could change a whole lot in terms of the injury report, but it's a bit of a mystery. Over to the Steelers' tight ends, with Matt Spaeth not the good news. He's still got the broken hand in the cast. They had, you know, Hubbard in there, the lineman, as the extra tight end a lot this past game. I don't know if that will continue, but here's another Tomlin excuse for why Heath Miller didn't get any targets this week. You know, Mike Vick apologized for not getting Heath more involved in the game plan, but Tomlin said it was scheme. It was a scheme thing. We didn't really want Heath to catch any passes this week.
That depends on how we approach it. You know, we used a lot of instances a week ago where Heath was involved in protection, and we do that from time to time. We got a great deal of confidence in him in his complete game, his ability to route run and get open, but also his ability to protect. Oftentimes when he stays in and protects, it allows a guy like Le'Veon to get out in the route. You know, we don't worry too much about numbers. Oftentimes it's what we intend to do. And those were the intentions on Thursday night. We'll see what our intentions are this week.
And again, I think some of that's true. I'm sure they did keep Heath in protection quite a bit to protect Vic. But, you know, you can still manage to get Heath Miller more than one catch. That's for sure by the time week's up. And that frustrated a lot of fantasy owners. I know that. And we'll talk to Jeff Erickson, our fantasy guru, coming up in about 10 minutes here on the show. Get his take on this. With all these backup quarterbacks in the league, that's what changes everything. That's why if you're a fantasy football player, you really do have to pay attention to linemen that are out and you know quarterbacks that are in, and it does affect everything. Game plans, and there's an NFL coach right there, Mike Tomlin, talking about how they had to switch things up, and they'll do so week to week based on what they think the matchup is. Last one from Tomlin here. He talked about the kicker situation for about 3 minutes. He was cold and black-hearted when it comes to any kind of remorse or compassion for Josh Scobie, and really didn't have a whole lot to offer about the new guy, Boswell, although he did get into, when Tim Benz, our co-host here, asked him about mental part of the equation and evaluating kickers, he then took that into a deep non-mental evaluation of the rotation of footballs and operation and speed times to kicks and everything like that, so kind of an interesting little exchange here with Tomlin, all the kicker questions in one.
Mike, was Scobie hurt, and what did you see in Boswell that you liked?
Scobie was not hurt, to my knowledge. Boswell just did a nice job in the workout. And, you know, we worked him out on Saturday at Heinz Field, and it was a very good environment for a workout, obviously, because the weather wasn't great, and you had an opportunity to evaluate him not only in that environment, but under less-than-ideal conditions. Besides that, we've done our research on him and not only followed him since he's been in the league with several teams, but also when he came out of Rice University. And so got a great deal of comfort with him and excited about rallying around him and supporting him.
Can you expand on that a little further? Because, you know, these guys don't get many opportunities. And a tryout is like that. It's such a small sample size to watch how he kicks on that particular day. You talked about what you had seen previously and following him. How much is the actual kicking competition or that tryout the deciding factor?
I don't have a percentage, but it's an element of it, obviously, how you perform, whether it's kicking the field goals or kickoffs or your ability to show specialty kicks. We do all of those things in the process of a warm-up, but also, of a workout, but also in selecting the people that we work out, we do our due diligence in terms of background. And obviously, we're bringing people that we have a level of interest in that we think are going to perform well in the tryout and ultimately perform well if we choose to do business with them. In the case of Boswell, we followed him, obviously, throughout the course of the preseason. He performed well in New York. I think he was 4 for 4. He had a significant game against New England. But he was a well-rounded and highly respected guy at Rice. When he came out of Rice, he was in New Orleans. In his first experience, he showed some versatility. He kicked off. He kicked field goals. He punted as well. He's an athlete who happens to place kick, and that's attractive to us. We'll see where we go with it.
Was there any ask the incumbent to be involved in the tryout, or at that point you have enough data that that's silly to do that?
Wasn't interested in that, no.
Was there any sentiment to give Scobie one more week?
Was not, no.
Mike, is leg strength becoming a bigger factor in the league now? You see teams, you know, taking guys with stronger legs, maybe, I don't want to say the sake of accuracy, but is that a bigger factor nowadays?
I'm not ready to speak for everyone. You know, for us, you know, obviously it's just an element of it, accuracy being the most important element of it.
Mike, you got height, speed, weight for linebackers and linemen. When it comes to the kickers, though, I mean, how do you evaluate the mental part of the game, especially in some short sample sizes?
You know, the mental part of the game is a tough evaluation for any position. But there are some very tangible elements of the evaluation when you're talking about place kicking. The tightness of the rotation of the ball allows for less movement. If they got a tight rotated ball, that's an attractive element of the physical characteristics. Operation time, the speed to the ball, from snap to kick is an important element, obviously. You know, there's a myriad of things that you look at that are tangible that I won't get into, but we evaluate that position just like we evaluate any other position.
So there's Tomlin. The most significant injury for the Steelers this year, of course, you would think it's Ben Roethlisberger, and he probably did cost them, you know, his injury this game. But you could easily go back and say Sean Swisham has cost them one, if not the chance at a second. So maybe in terms of the significance of different injuries, it's kind of hard to rate that. There's a website called mangameslost.com, and they try to calculate the value of every injury and rank. They put it together a list of what they call TMITT metrics. Okay, and basically these are it's the number of injuries a team has, but what the total value is. In other words, it's, every injury is not the same. You know, if you lose your guy that barely plays, it shouldn't mean as much. So it makes some sense, but they use these Pro Football Reference approximate value leaders based on the previous seasons. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. Like, quarterbacks are ranked highly in this list, so to lose Ben is a big blow. But for whatever reason, on the last mangamesloss.com sheet of who's been hurt the most by injuries this year, Carolina is number one, and they're unbeaten at 4-0, the Carolina Panthers. Now, they have lost some important players. They've lost Luke Kuechly, their star middle linebacker. They've lost their top pass rusher, Charles Johnson. They lost Kelvin Benjamin, the number one receiver. He's out for the year. So, you know, they got these guys, these unknown guys, Ted Ginn stepping up for them, and they got all these players. All the injuries the Chargers have had, they've had 12 players lost, and they're actually only, according to the significance list, middle of the pack, 16th in the NFL right now in terms of how big a deal those injuries are. Steelers actually rank a little higher, 11th, based on 9 players lost and, you know, the value of these players that they use. So, it's an interesting attempt at a kind of a putting a number on it, like how dramatically is a player affecting a team. And if you go to Pro Football Reference, they have, like, the average value of players. Like, last year, J.J. Watt was the highest-rated value player. They gave him a number of 22. I don't even know how that... they came up with that. But year by year, it's different. Like, Adrian Peterson was the highest-rated player 1 year at 19. So if he would have been injured, it would have been a bigger blow to Minnesota that year than, you know, obviously a different player at a different position. But I don't know if I buy it so much. But anyway, the Chargers are beat up. The Steelers are beat up. And this will be a fight for 2-2 teams here at the quarter pole to try to steal one until they all get healthy and start to get rolling a little bit late in the year. Steelers 365 here on Trib Live Radio every Wednesday morning 9 to 10, brought to you by Rich Garland and Nationwide, Garland Insurance at 412-678-8868, by Mr. Magic Car Wash and by Mr. Reuter Plumbing. We get a little fantasy football fix in. We'll do so next with our good friend Jeff Erickson of RotoWire.com. Jeff will give you his fantasy advice for Week 5, who to start, who to sit, and who to avoid here on Trib Live. Mr. Reuter Plumbing with 24/7 emergency service and weekend service at no extra charge. Why call Mr. Reuter first? Free estimates. You know the price before we start. Fixed right the first time. Clean, professional technicians, and all work guaranteed. Residential services include complete plumbing, repairs, clogged drains and sewer cleaning, faucets and disposals, toilets and water heaters. Drain cleaning services include trench, sewer and water line replacement, pipelining and video inspection. Mr. Reuter Plumbing, 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Service when you want it. Red Carpet Treatment, make the call, 724-553-3355 or 412-567-1222. Online at Rooter2.com. That's Rooter, the number 2.com.
In the nation, we make wise investment choices. We work hard for our money. We want our money to work even harder for us. At Nationwide, we have products and solutions to help you and your family build for the future. Contact Nationwide's Rich Garland today at 412-678-8868. That's 412-678-8868 to find out if your money could be working harder for you. Auto, home, life, bundle up, and save up to 25% off. Nationwide has more discounts on home insurance so you can save more money. Combine your auto, home, and life policies and you could save up to 25% off. Plus, you'll get our famous On Your Side service. To learn more about combining your policies, call Rich Garland today at 412-678-8868. Looking for a quality car wash without breaking the bank? Mr. Magic Car Wash offers daily discounts and will have your car clean, shiny, and dry in just minutes. Visit MrMagicCarWash.com today for more information about our services and to find a location near you. At Mr. Magic Car Wash, we use the latest technology to safely and effectively clean your vehicle. Our soft cloth, fresh water, and blend of 9 different detergents will gently remove dirt, leaving your car clean, shiny, and dry every time. Check out Mr. Magic Car Wash at any of these 5 great locations: Brentwood, Castle Shannon, Banksville Road, Upper St. Clair, and Bridgeville.
Nerds.
Nerds.
Nerds!
What is a nerd?
Trib Live Radio presents Fantasy Sports.
That nerd saw me naked!
Nerd!
With Ken Laird.
Are all nerds as good as you?
And fantasy expert Jeff Erickson of RotoWire.com.
I'd link to that.
Time for our fantasy football fix with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire.com. We do it every Wednesday about this time. Jeff, good morning. Your Bengals are 4-0. Congratulations.
Thanks, Ken. Good morning.
How's life out there?
Life is good. Life as a Bengals fan is good. I'm really impressed with the progress that Andy Dalton has made, and the fact that he's got all of his targets back that he's missing last year has made a world of difference. That all said, I'm advising people don't use him this week. Bad matchup, even if it's at home against Seattle.
Wow. So you're buying into Seattle then. Obviously, you feel like their defense is back to legit status.
Yeah, I mean, they're still shutdown defense there. Matthew Stafford did nothing against them last week. Now, granted, I think they're a lot tougher at home than they are on the road. But really, you know, Andy Dalton, as good as he's been, he's no Aaron Rodgers. And unless you're Aaron Rodgers, you can't overcome that. So this week I've got Dalton all the way down at 23 on one of my quarterbacks. And keep in mind that there's only going to be 28 this week because there's 4 teams on bye.
Does that go for Jeremy Hill as well, who's had a couple big weeks in a row here, hasn't he?
One good week. Two weeks ago against Baltimore, didn't do much. I've got him relatively low. You just look around at the running back picture in the NFL. I can't even find 12 running backs that I'm comfortable with starting this week. I can say, yes, I trust in him. He's going to be good for me this week. I think my list stops at about 10 or 11. I've got Hill down at 16.
Big weeks last week. One running back who's had 2 weeks in a row. We talked about him a week ago. Devontae Freeman, Atlanta. They're unbeaten. This guy's 3 touchdowns a week here on back-to-back weeks. Will that keep going? Are you confident that they've sorted things out in Atlanta?
I still think Tevin Coleman will be part of the picture again eventually. But how can you not start Freeman after the last 2 weeks he's done? And the other thing about him is not only is he getting all these touchdowns, but he's also receiving passes too, and that's something that's really encouraging. That means he could be a 3-down back. I think Coleman eventually will come in. I think part of this is they've got a much improved offensive line, and I think that goes a long way towards explaining all their success. But the thing is, they're going to keep riding that, and I think Freeman's going to get the first dibs on that.
4 teams on bye this week, correct? Dolphins, Jets, Vikings, Panthers.
Yep.
And that means who's the big missing fish there for fantasy purposes?
Adrian Peterson, I think, is the big one there. You know, these aren't two, and then Chris Ivory. But, you know, Carolina's not a big fantasy team. There's Greg Olsen, Cam Newton. And I think if you have him, you're using him. Miami's been a disaster so far offensively. Lamar Miller, you're probably thankful that you don't have to make a decision on him this week. With the coaching change, maybe that'll change his value a little bit. Jarvis Landry. But, you know, the Minnesota passing game, we're really not investing in that too much. Brandon Marshall missing is going to hurt. So those are the major ones. But, you know, these aren't big fantasy teams, at least.
How about, as you mentioned, defenses are now, you're starting to get worth the quarter pole. You know which Ds are good. This affects your rankings every week, Jeff. Denver, the number one defense by a lot of metrics. They got Oakland coming to their place, I think. Or no, they're going to Oakland.
No, they're going to Oakland.
Yeah, how do you feel about the Raiders' offensive weapons then this week, Carr and?
I'm downgrading them significantly. I think they are. Yeah, this passing game is just getting shut down week after week. I think Carr is going to really have a tough day. I think Cooper will have a tough day because I think that Denver will be able to shut them down pretty good. Latavius Murray, you probably have to start him if you own him. You're probably not happy about it, but. And same goes for Cooper, probably, because, you know, you paid a pretty high price to get him the opportunity cost. Suggests that your replacement level was probably pretty low on that. I don't love him, and I certainly wouldn't use him in daily fantasy sports.
How about other defenses that besides Denver and Seattle? I mean, the Jets are on bye. The other highly ranked ones seem to be like Washington, Arizona, Tennessee. These teams don't strike me as teams I should really fear, but should I?
No, not really. I think Arizona's someone you use against Detroit. Again, Matthew Stafford's having a hard time getting protected by that offensive line. Really hasn't done much this year. So Detroit doesn't scare me if I own the Arizona defense. Green Bay is a good one, home against St. Louis. I actually like the Bengals defense home against Seattle. I think both defenses are pretty decently set. Seattle's got the tougher draw, but they're just such a good defense. Sneaky good pickup this week is the New York Giants defense, home against San Francisco, and the dumpster fire that is Colin Kaepernick right now.
He's getting taunted by Clay Matthews and others probably. Guys that had big weeks, you tell me whether it's fact or fiction here, real or going to be a fluke. Tavon Austin broke out for St. Louis a bit this week.
You know, he's had two games like this now where he's made big impacts on the game. Week one against St. Louis, he also was big, but he's just so small. He's not a frequent target usually. It's really hard to invest him. I grabbed him in one league that's really deep where we go 48 wide receivers. But more often than not, it's pretty tough to start him.
Duke Johnson, a Cleveland running back.
Yes. Cleveland offensive line is quietly pretty good. And Duke Johnson is getting targets. That's the other thing I'm encouraged by. He was targeted 10 times in the passing game. Also got a goal line carry, just got stopped just short. And then they effectively use play action with him to throw to Gary Barnage on the next play for a touchdown. He's ascendant. He's a guy that I'd consider using this week.
How about a couple receivers? Mike Wallace, formerly of this parish, now with Minnesota, 8 catches, a touchdown. Also, Leonard Hankerson for Atlanta, 6 catches.
Hankerson's really intriguing to me because he's the number two guy now on a pretty good offense. You've got him going ahead of Roddy White. And I think this would be something that could be sustainable. Case of Wallace, he's on bye this week, but even if he wasn't, I'd be a little concerned, only because a lot of that he did nothing prior to this week. And you look at, they didn't have Charles Johnson. Another wide receiver went down with an injury. It was he and Stephon Diggs were basically the only two games in town. And I don't think he's, you know, going to be a regular target monster in other weeks.
Pretty big week for Charles Clay, the Bills tight end. How about, he's probably owned in a lot of leagues anyway, right?
Yeah, he is, especially after that display put on in the preseason. I think that he's a guy that is a frequent target of Tyrod Taylor. You're going to want to use him more often than not.
Denver running backs have been confusing all year. Ronnie Hillman, what, 11 catches from Peyton this week?
Yeah, and they, after the week was over, they said that C.J. Anderson, quote-unquote, is the starter, but he's going to lose more touches to Hillman. So this is a full-on committee now. And if you look across the NFL, there are so many of these committees, Ken. It's so difficult. Look at the Giants in any given week. Which running back do you trust for them? Nobody. I mean, it's then one week it's Jennings, another week it's Vereen, another week it's Andre Williams. Philly, they've got three running backs you have to choose from. The Cleveland, as you mentioned, Duke Johnson versus Isaiah Crowell. Crowell's still getting more touches, more snaps. Even Cincinnati, Gio Bernard has had more carries than Jeremy Hill each of the last 2 weeks. It's really tricky to kind of figure this all out.
We had just saw the Rams in here, Jeff, and Todd Gurley. I didn't think they used him real well. Looked like they got him back to between the tackles, some good power running against Arizona. How about in St. Louis? Do you believe in Gurley now as the feature back going forward?
Yes, absolutely. They reached up in the first round to take him. It was just a matter of kind of getting him up to speed. When he was making his debut against you guys, and then, you know, it was on this past week against Arizona where they're going to use him a lot more. I've got him in my top 10 this week. I think he'll be a regular fixture in my top 10 going forward.
We're talking to Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com, the finest fantasy sports site there, and we've got the best fantasy guy in the business right now as far as I'm concerned with Jeff on the line. One more, and then we'll talk about some disappointments. We're talking running backs, but San Diego with the Steelers on Monday night, is Danny Woodhead the feature? They got Melvin Gordon there too, right? How about their timeshare of players?
I think Gordon is actually still the leader in terms of snaps and usually carries. However, game flow is everything with him. If it gets into an open passing game, it's going to be Woodhead. You know, he got 30 snaps against Cleveland. That's not great. This is Gordon we're talking about. He went 12 for 38. He's still a good runner, but he got one red zone carry. And then the next play they used him on play action. And that was the touchdown pass to the backup tight end, which had every fantasy owner pulling their hair because it wasn't any of their interest. But Woodhead, you know, he's going to be involved in the passing game, and he's still a red zone threat too. So we'll see. I think it's, again, if you're in a PPR league, you can use Woodhead. I mean, he was 4 for 4 for 84 yards receiving last week against the Browns. And, you know it's going to be a high-scoring game against Pittsburgh. This should be a good matchup for both teams in terms of fantasy interest. San Diego quietly has had a pretty bad defense, a good team to start your fantasy components against.
Mm. Seattle, their star players. Marshawn Lynch was injured. I guess he's questionable this week. And what about Jimmy Graham and his development?
Or lack thereof. I think some of it is that Seattle offensive line is really not any good. You saw Russell Wilson running for his life on Monday night, constantly pressured by Detroit. 6 sacks, 2 fumbles. That affects Jimmy Graham a lot. One, he doesn't have as much time to get open. Wilson has less time to find him. And two, sometimes they have to keep him in and block. That's a real problem. I wonder how open Graham is getting. ESPN showed a couple plays where he was getting open, but this stems back to last year. If you recall, there were games last year where he wasn't getting targeted a whole lot, even after he came back from an injury. I remember the Bengals game. I think he had 3 targets, and obviously it's hard to do much with 3 targets, and I think this is going to be an ongoing concern with him.
Disappointing weeks for a couple receivers. Odell Beckham, 5 catches, 38 yards. Julio Jones, 4 catches, 38 yards.
Yeah, with Jones, it was a game flow issue. Atlanta was up 28-0 before you could bat an eye. And Freeman was running so well. And remember, Jones has been listed as a probable. He's been missing practices each week. It was a pretty easy decision for them to say, okay, this game's in the bag. Let's go easy on Julio here. Odell Beckham Jr., same sort of thing. They were spreading the ball around pretty well. Other guys got open. He threw for 3 touchdowns. So I'm not really that worried about that. He'll have better days.
DeMarco Murray's been just a frustration every week at this point, hasn't he?
Absolutely. He was starting to run the ball a little bit better last week, but it's a 3-headed monster, and that's not going away. I mean, Ryan Matthews has been a feature back in this league, too. Matthews barely got any work at all. And then, of course, there's still Darren Sproles, who comes in on third down a lot, and that's an ever-present concern.
How about Greg Olsen, the Panthers tight end? They're 4-0, but he had a quiet week. Just kind of a week-to-week thing with him?
Yeah, and again, Carolina got up big on this one early. So I'm not really that concerned about that. In week one, he got shut down pretty good, but that's also because he had a touchdown called back. And so his overall number should be better. Remember, he had the monster game against the Saints and another good game in their other game. So, you know, he's playing well. Now, he's on bye. Carolina's schedule is going to pick up at some point. They've had 4 relatively easy matchups, so we'll see what happens when the going gets tougher.
And one last one, the Steelers and the Ravens seemed like a year ago, but Forsett had a big game, and Tomlin said yesterday, Jeff, that they were prepared for that. They were going to give up some stuff in the run game to get to the quarterback and take away the play-action pass, which is kind of interesting. But what do you believe about Forsett going forward now?
Well, even in that game where he ran well, they didn't throw to him. And that's a concern for me. He only had 1 target in that game. The week before, he had 7 targets. I think it's actually a good time to try to trade Forsett. I'm a little worried that, you know, they that he's kind of a one-year wonder. He's not young. He's 29. He should be more involved in the passing game than he is. Now, he may have to be going forward with all the attrition they've seen in their wide receiver core. No Steve Smith this week. Might be a longer-term injury. We know Campanaro, the guy that scored the first quarter touchdown, is out for the season. They traded for Chris Givens from the Rams. You know, when you get a guy the Rams don't even want to use, I mean, how much of an impact that can make. Their rookie Breshad Perriman's a week-to-week thing, too. They're really lacking good targets right now.
Jeff, look forward to our chats every week. How do folks find all your stuff here in the next couple of days?
You can hit up my rankings on rotowire.com. Just go to rotowire.com/free, get a free 10-day trial, get access to everything on their site, including our injury news. Our Jeff Stotts is our licensed physical trainer. He does a weekly article for us for injuries. We have Kevin Payne writes a waiver wire article. Chris List with his East Coast offense is fantastic. If you're playing survivor pools, we got you covered there. So check it all out, rotowire.com/free.
Jeff, you're the man. Do you feel the spirit of Johnny Cueto in the air for tonight's wild card game here in the Berg?
I cannot wait to watch that game. I think it's going to be an awesome game. It's a bummer to me that these two teams have to play each other. That's the system we have, though. So I really can't wait for this game.
Yeah, it should be fun. Jeff, thanks. Have a great week. We'll do it again next Wednesday if you're willing.
All right, Ken. Always. Thanks a lot.
All right. Jeff Erickson, rotowire.com. Again, four teams on bye this week, Miami and the Jets, who might just get my combined Jagoff of the Week vote at 10 a.m. just for being Miami. I don't know. The Jets, I guess, don't deserve it. It's more like Miami and the Bills for, again, making the Patriots just landslide favorites in the worst division in pro sports every year. Again, I guess the Jets are actually somewhat decent and have the number one points per game defense in the league, so I'll have to rethink that one a little bit. Vikings and Panthers also on bye this week. Steelers could probably use a bye, then we'll get it for a while. And they'll get ready here at the quarter pole for San Diego. Now, coming up at the top of the hour, Jagoff of the Week voting will commence. Get your votes in, sportstalk@tribweb.com to email the program. It's also a thorough baseball preview day. As we talked there with Jeff, we're going to be all over Buccos and Cubs starting at 10. And great sound from over at the park yesterday from Tim Benz, who was over in coverage. We're also going to talk to Jordan Burnfield from 670 The Score in Chicago. He's in town covering, of course, from the Cubs side of it. Rob Rossi, our Trib columnist, will join us. We've got Mike Graw doing a Pirates pregame show from 6 to first pitch tonight. Also, Josh Taylor from 2 to 4 with two full hours of Pirates preview. So, big day of baseball talk. We'll get it all going at 10 a.m. in about 15 minutes' time. We do want to get our weekly check-in with John Banaszek, Super Steeler three times over. We talk to John every week. Robert Morris, football coach, will do so next here on Steelers 365 on Trib Live Radio.